When I started at Capital Crew, never in a million years did I think I will be a two-time Olympian someday. but it's such a great program. And I think, yeah, getting those early years there really helped me start with the sport from a place of love and joy and just having a great time out on Lake Natoma. And that's, I think, what helped me with the longevity of the sport.
Welcome to Dying to Ask the Road to Paris. I'm Deirdre Fitzpatrick. One of my favorite sports to cover is rowing. You're in a beautiful place usually. You're outside. It's super zen. The athletes tend to be really smart and fun to talk to. I mean, without fail, I don't think I've ever met a rower who I didn't find really interesting. And I think there are a few reasons for that. Rowing requires a high level of voluntary suffering. So you're often practicing early in the morning. You got to deal with bad weather sometimes. And unless you row in a single, you must be a good teammate. You have to put the good of the boat ahead of what you want to do. Because if you row your own stroke, that boat doesn't go the way it's supposed to. And if you really want to understand rowing, totally recommend The Boys in the Boat. The movie came out earlier this year. It's as good as the book, in my opinion. Really, really good. Well, today you're going to hear a conversation with rower Michelle Sexer. She is 37. She grew up in Folsom, California. And at the age of 14, she followed her older sister into the sport of rowing at a club called Capital Crew, which is based out at Lake Natoma at the Sac State Aquatic Center. Now, that particular club has put out a number of really well-known Olympic rowers, gold medalists, just from that club. A lot of kids get into it in high school. Michelle rows double lightweight sculls, so the athletes are smaller than what you would normally see in an eight-person boat. And the relationship between the two rowers in the boat is really interesting. On this Dying to Ask, the Zen of Rowing. How a two-person boat is kind of like a marriage. How do you keep that on track? And how rowers stay mentally engaged when they're training for endurance. They spend hours on ergs, rowing machines. Can you imagine? How do you mentally push through all that monotony? Great insight for the rest of us. And also, why Michelle couldn't compete in a third Olympics even if she wanted to. Why that is, and how she feels about that. Here's Michelle Sexer, two-time Olympic rower, on this week's Dying to Ask, The Road to Paris. Olympians, they're just different. Sure, they're fitter and faster, but they're mentally different too. Because when the body breaks down, the Olympic mindset takes over. I'm Deirdre Fitzpatrick, and I've traveled to 10 Olympics for Hearst Television with my partner, Mike Domalog. But Tommy and I were home for the last two games because of the pandemic. But this summer, the Olympics are back in all their glory, and we're going to Paris. Fans in the stands, the full athlete experience, and it's Paris! Trivian, join us for the backstories of how Team USA gets to the top of a podium and how you can add a little Olympic edge in your life. All right, well, Michelle, congrats on a second Olympic team. It's huge.
Yes, Deirdre, thank you so much. I'm thrilled to be here today, checking in from Princeton, New Jersey, as I get ready to head over and race the lightweight women's double for the USA rowing team.
Well, and it's the last time for that particular class of boat in the Olympics, so that's got to be a little bittersweet.
It is. It's definitely bittersweet. I am so sad they're going to take lightweight rowing out of the Olympic program, but there's also this part of me that's really excited. It's the last time this boat class is ever going to race at the Olympics. It's been getting faster and faster every Olympic cycle. We keep seeing the world records break and fall every year. And I think with this being the last dance for the lightweight women's double, that we're going to see some sparks fly in our final at the Olympics.
It's all out for this one.
Absolutely. So I'm just thrilled I get to be a part of it.
You know, I'm so amazed by that particular class because what people might not realize is when they talk about lightweight, they're actually referring to weight. I mean, it really is weight, and it's weight of athletes, it's weight of the boat. And you guys are smaller athletes compared to what people might, after watching, you know, The Boys in the Boat, what people might be expecting. Because a lot of the rowers in the eight boat, they're like 6 feet tall. You guys aren't, and you're not huge.
Yes, at least. A lot of the men on our men's team are about somewhere between 6'2", 6'5", probably a wingspan that's a couple inches longer.
Yeah.
And lightweight rowing for the women's double, we each weigh in at 57 kilograms, which is about 126 pounds. And we do that 2 hours before the competition. And it does. It keeps us, we are a bit smaller. I think if I'm walking around the grocery store, people ask and they assume something like gymnastics, maybe track and field, and they don't typically guess rower. But what's interesting about having the lightweight category is that you see really small margins in our races, the way those
Right.
outcomes play out, because it's a level playing field for body size, for mass in the boat, which means it's sort of a level playing field for power output and a little bit of physiology. So the races come down to winning or losing by just a few inches over 2,000 meters, about a mile and a quarter on the track. So it's a really fascinating boat class and event to watch as a lightweight rower.
And that's what's so wild, because like I was looking up your Tokyo times. You guys finished fifth. You are half a second off the podium, 1 second off the gold medal. I mean, that's ridiculous, because there aren't very many sports, period, where 1 second makes that big of a difference.
Over a 7-minute race, it is a tiny
Right.
margin. And if you look at a photo finish from that race, it's, five boats jam-packed into that short of a distance. It was a very close race. And the typhoon there in the Tokyo Bay where we were racing made for some very challenging conditions in the sprint. Part of why I chose to keep rowing after the Tokyo Olympics and to target the Paris Olympics were because I thought, gosh, it was, my first year racing the lightweight double with Molly Reckford at the Olympics, and 1 second off a gold medal is just enough. It's close enough that you're
Right.
like, I think I could get there.
Yeah.
It's far enough away that you've got this hunger. I've got this hunger and this motivation to really try and see if I can close that gap on those competitors. So, thought it'd be worth trying again. And it's been a successful Olympic cycle since
Yeah.
then. I won a silver medal at the World Championships in the post-Olympic year, so in 2022, won a silver medal at the World Championships last year in Belgrade, Serbia, and so we're hoping to see if we can match or beat that finish this year at the Paris Olympics.
I mean, that is all out. I mean, there will be nothing left after that.
Yeah, but I'm
The
thrilled. I'm really,
No, go ahead.
I was gonna say, just looking forward to not only seeing if we can improve on that result being 1 second, but fifth place off of the gold medal, but also the Paris, wanting to come back for the Paris Games, because the Tokyo Games were so impacted by COVID, by the global pandemic at the time. And I'm really looking forward to not only racing my second Olympics, but getting to experience the Olympics as a whole and this celebration of global community and friendship across so many countries. There's a unity and friendship that exists from country to country as an athlete that I wish outside of sports people could really experience and see. And so I'm thrilled to go over and get to appreciate the Olympics and be in that village in a way that's not so
Well, I mean,
impacted by the
the
pandemic.
reality is you're going to get a normal Olympics, which, quite frankly, from what I hear, is crazy in the athletes' village. I mean, I have heard from people, we didn't travel during the pandemic to the Olympics. We covered it from back home, which was not nearly as much fun, I'll be honest. However, for the people that I know who were there in Tokyo, they have said how difficult it was in terms of the testing you had to go through and just the stress and not having people in the stands. This time, you get the full meal deal. You get your family coming to be there. You have fans there at the finish line cheering for you, and all the pomp and circumstance that goes on with being on the international stage. I mean, that is going to be amazing.
Yes, I'm thrilled about it, because it wasn't just, oh, I'm sad that we missed out on the full Olympic experience in Tokyo, but there was also a level of fear. As you mentioned, we did have to do COVID testing every single morning. We had contract tracing on our phones. And if you tested positive, you didn't get to compete in your Olympic final. And I remember there were several women from Folsom, Granite Bay area that had made the softball team. And I saw it on the news and I thought, oh, it'd be so fun to go meet them and catch up or have lunch in the dining hall with, friends from my area. But we didn't want to interact with other athletes. So I'm thrilled to get to experience the whole thing, even the racing. It is the best part of racing. I love coming into the final 500 meters of the race, and it gets louder and louder, the roar of the stands, and hearing the cheers and the screaming and all sorts of, noise that's coming in the final sprint. And it was I mean, you're racing, you don't know it so much in the moment, but it was so silent racing at those Olympics. And I'm thrilled for this go round to have everyone in the stands. My parents are flying out from Folsom, friends and family from all my years of rowing and the rowing community will be there. And I can't wait to experience that.
Oh, that's awesome. All right, let's talk about happier things. I have always wondered, in your boat, two-person boat, I've heard it described like, in effect, I think you said even a moment ago, it's a little bit like a marriage. Why, can you explain like that dynamic and the way you interact with your partner, Molly?
Yes, it's the double. It's fascinating. I love this boat class so much. In the eights, you know, we actually call it crew. We talk about the eights being a crew because you've got eight rowers and a coxswain. And there's a much larger thing at play that you're all sort of contributing to this bigger system, these nine people in this one shell. The opposite end of that spectrum, you're in a single. It's just you. You don't have to compromise or match or synchronize motions with anyone. It's all you. Successes and failures are yours. The double is this really fascinating middle ground where it's just you and this one other person. And I love it because I still, you know, the more that Molly and I can synchronize our emotions, the more speed we get without being stronger or fitter or any of those things. We can make the boat go faster purely by moving in perfect synchronized motion. And it means that the way I want to row naturally and the way she wants to row naturally has to be a little bit compromised. There's definitely a give and take of, oh, you want to make a little bit more length here, and I want to make a little more length at this position. But blending both of our natural strokes is where we can really come together and make speed. So it's a lot of compromise. It's a lot of, I've learned from the team dynamic, learning to meet my teammate where they're at. If someone's having a hard day, if she's having a hard day, or she's low on energy or kind of in a mood that, you know, what can I bring to the table? Can I show up 110%? Can I be in a lighter, you know, more positive mood to help her bring her up? And she does the same for me on days where I'm low energy. So it's a really great boat, and just having someone to share these experiences with. The times that we win, it's so special to cross the finish line and share that experience with one other person. And the same, you know, if we have a bad day and we fail, it's us in it together, and you're not alone struggling with that failure, and you have a person you can say, okay, how do we do better next time? So the double, it's such a fun boat to row.
I find this interesting because there are a lot of parallels to what I do being a morning anchor. Like, I have a partner, and it's a lot about chemistry, but it's a lot about like knowing the other person, but also giving that other person grace on the day you're having a bad day. And vice versa, which is exactly what you just described. So I'm curious to know, like, do you have a tip for people just in general about just getting along with somebody that you need to work with?
Oh my gosh, always. Yeah, there's so much that goes into it. I think, yeah, one, just being able to really read a room and see people where they're at. It is, you know, you can tell someone comes in, what's their body language? Are they chipper? Do they greet you first? Do they, you know, have kind of some energy and bounce to their posture? And if not, how can I either help them get there, you know, share a positive thing, or let them, oh, I'm feeling good and strong today. This is going to be a great training session. And whether I feel that way or not, the second I say it, I've committed to it. And so it can help kind of, you know, create that excitement for the training session ahead. Or, you know, the other approach to that is if someone's having a tough day and they're tired, the training's hard, or there's things going on outside of the boat, trying to show up the best version of myself, saying, okay, she's having a tough day, so I'm not going to make any mistakes, or I'm not going to bring us down, that I'm going to be my strongest, most stable self today. Because, you know, some days your partner can only bring 80% of their best. And so I'm going to try and make up for that, knowing that if I come into it and have a tough day, she's going to make up for it for me. So it's definitely, yeah, knowing the person. And also, I'd say there is, the more you can really dial into someone's, everyone has kind of their little idiosyncrasies. So you might, if you're doing your morning show, you notice someone might have gestures or a certain way that you can almost choreograph. You look to them for the eye contact of when someone's going to answer the question or not. And in the boat, if I'm rowing behind Molly and I say, okay, the field, it's a six boat field. All right, GB made a move and France is closing in. I can really read almost her body language from behind her of, you know, seeing her posture kind of come into this stronger, more aggressive position. I know she's about to pounce. She knows I'm about to call a move because we're not going to take this from GB or France. We're about to put some pressure on this and add some power to our rhythm. So really being able to study her body language and know like anything, the small like nod of a head means that she's about to go. And just being able to kind of read that body language and have this nonverbal language we're speaking to one another with the boat is
And you can't
it's a really
fake
cool
that. I mean, like,
thing.
chemistry is a weird thing. Sometimes it's 100% natural, it's just there. Sometimes you can train it, but you can't fake it.
No, and it takes, I will say, it takes a lot of years, a lot of races to hone it in. And that's why we do go get as much race experience as we can. For example, before we race Paris, Molly and I will head over to Europe. We will do a 2-week training block in Italy before we race a World Cup in Lucerne, Switzerland. And we will see most of the countries that we'll be racing in Paris. And it's a good chance to, again, hone in these skills
Right.
and to test our
Spy on the
speeds. We'll be
competition.
about, yeah, eye everyone up, you know, throw some more cards on the table, see how they look. And what's great is that we'll still be far enough out from the games that based on the speed we're able to show at World Cup, we can tweak our training program or make some adjustments, or have a great performance and get that really nice confidence boost as we prepare for the games.
You know, your sport, you make big impact with very, very small changes, which I think would drive most people crazy. But you must be a very, very detailed person to be so successful.
Absolutely. And at this level, you know, when you're talking the top percent of your sport, it's like, as I mentioned last year at World Cup, Molly and I came in silver. When I say lost, I'm saying we came in second by 800ths of a second. And so for me, that result is on my mind. I've spent the last 11 months really thinking, what are the motions I can make in the boat to make me go 800ths of a second faster?
What
And
would
it
that
really does come
be?
down to, and it really does come down to thinking of, you know, we talk about the length of our rowing stroke. So from when you put the oar in the water to the moment you take the oar out of the water, if I can add 1 centimeter of length to that every stroke, I've added a second to our boat speed. So it's months and months of training. It's hours and hours of rowing to see if I can just row in a way that is 1 centimeter longer, which, you know, just a little bit taller with the body in it. I love it. It's a fun game and it doesn't get old at all. And it really does have to be detail oriented, as I said, kind of getting those marginal gains as you get closer and closer to the top. You're just trying to squeeze out every last little inch of speed you can.
Oh, it's awesome. You know, you grew up rowing in a group called Capital Crew, which is based out on Lake Natoma. And there have been a number of Olympians who have come out of this program. And for a long time, this was a real East Coast sport, but it was groups like Capital Crew and groups out of the state of Washington who really started growing it and turning it into much more of a West Coast sport.
Absolutely. I mean, everyone knows, you know, the Harvard Yale is like the oldest duel in history, and it is typically a very Ivy League, East Coast based sport. But as we saw, most people have seen or read Boys in the Boat, and what we see going up and down the California border, all up and down the state, we've got Capital Crew, which has been a powerhouse in junior high school level rowing for so many decades. We've got Los Gatos, you've got Marin, you've got Oakland Strokes, you've got Long Beach, Newport Aquatic Center,
Oakland
just
is huge.
fantastic powerhouse programs that nationally are always on the podium at nationals. So I'm so grateful that it spread out to the West Coast, that it was so well adopted out here, and learning to row in high school, walking onto the rowing team as a freshman when I was at Folsom High, it changed my whole life just coming to the sport that way.
What do rowers think of The Boys on the Boat, the movie, and the book? I love the book.
I love the story. There's so much that goes into it behind the scenes. I love how much it makes sort of the civilian community aware of rowing and how hard it is, how challenging rowing in a crew is. I will say my one hangup is, when are we going to get a Girls in the Boat? Where is the Women in the Boat book? Because I think women's sports are having just a field day right now. As we see in March Madness, we see with Caitlin Clark, and I love the story. And I would just really love for someone to really take up a similar story with
Well,
women's
I
sports and
think you need
women's
to take
rowing
that up with
because
George Clooney since he directed that
I
one.
know. And you'll see, I mean, in the women's eight, we had a legacy on the USA women's team for 10 years. They won gold medals without any blip in that record. And that's a legacy that is unmatched. And especially on the open weight women's side in the eight, you're talking, my roommates, my teammates, they're 6'1" with wingspans of 6'2", like incredible gladiator women. I love Boys in the Boat. I would just also love to shine a little light on how incredible the women's side is.
Listen, you just put it out in the universe. I mean, let's see what happens. How do you keep your brain in the game after all these years of competing? You've been on the national team for what, 11 years now?
Yes,
How do
it's
you
been a long
keep that? How do you keep the brain in there focused when you're in a sport that requires as much focus as it does?
It's a great question. And it is, rowing's an endurance sport. So a similar, we're working on one motion, repetitive motion. We are just doing that over and over and over again. It's not quite like basketball or volleyball with the excitement of different plays. But for me, keeping my brain in the game was the ability to zoom out and see what the whole picture of the puzzle that goes into trying to become an Olympic champion, Olympic gold medalist. And it's not just, okay, is my endurance good? It's also, is my power good? How's my nutrition? How's my technique? Am I good with these fun skills and drills of my blade work? Am I a good teammate? Am I someone that can get the most out of my doubles partner by really being a supportive, emotionally intelligent partner? With lightweight rowing, it's, am I managing my weight well? Am I managing my injury prevention well? And so it might seem like I'm just practicing one motion forward and back and forward and back over and over, but there's so much that goes into it that it keeps me really engaged because you're constantly trying to fill in every slice of the pie or every piece of the puzzle to get the whole picture just perfect enough. And also joy. I love it. Like it's hard, it's grueling, grueling training. It's time consuming. There's a lot of personal life sacrifice that goes into it, but at the end of the day, you're out on the lake. We always row early, so you're watching the sunrise. You have beautiful sounds of the blades moving through the water. I'm sure anyone that's watched or seen rowing, just it's very rhythmic and it's beautiful sound. You hear, morning chorus of the birds that I love to be able to just remove myself from the Olympic pursuit and be like, this is a beautiful day on the lake in a boat. And sometimes when it gets too much or too stressful, to be able to sort of come back and ground myself with that, really just, it's a beautiful sport to be involved in.
It's a beautiful sport to cover. It's one of my favorites. And anytime I've gotten to go out on the water next to, it's typically been alongside the eight boats. The like flow state meditative quality to blades going in at the same time and the sound and the silence at the same time is one of the most beautiful things I think I've ever seen shooting a TV story. It must be amazing to be the person actually creating that too.
It is get, I mean, when we get it right, and maybe that's how I stay engaged, because when you get it right, it is such a high. But like you said, it's such a beautiful flow state. It can feel like meditation. You might be sweating and a heart rate of 180 and your legs are on fire, but it can still be so meditative in that moment. And you talk about these, even the sounds of it can be really helpful coaching clues. So to me, I can hear the sound of when the blade enters cleanly to when it enters too splashy and aggressively, like they sound different. So I'm rowing along, I'm listening for this nice plop. It should feel like when you're throwing a pebble into the water, it's a nice light splash, not like throwing a boulder into a water. And it really does create almost this song, almost this chorus if you cue into the sound of the wheels as they roll in and they push out. It's a really special thing, I think, to experience with another human. And then, as you mentioned, to be able to do that in a synchronized fashion, it takes a lot. And I'd say one of the things I've worked on a lot in this Olympic cycle is sort of the mental health side of it. And I bring that up because in order to create this beautiful, rhythmic, meditative row, I need to come at it from a really quiet, clear mind. And the more I've practiced the ability to, the second I step in the boat, I leave behind my work stress, my friendship stress, whatever, house chores stress. If I can sort of create this barrier when I get into the boat and I push off from the dock, I leave all that behind. I very, very literally leave that on the dock and I have this nice quiet mind to work from, like this blank easel. It's so much easier to kind of have those beautiful rows, and working through the mental health side, working either with my teammates or my coach or a sports psych helps me create that situation that it makes some really good training sessions possible.
That's a really beautiful way for the rest of us who are not going to the Olympics to compete, to look at the time that we do have to exercise and work on our health, and to maybe put the phone down and to really focus and to be in that moment and take it in for everything that we can get out of it, because it does give back, whether you're training for an Olympics or you're running around the block. That's your time to work on you.
It is, and I do empathize with that. There were 2 years that I was in grad school at the University of Tulsa, and I hadn't yet set my sights on the Olympic team, and so I was trying to, like any normal person, work my job or go to my classes and exercise. And once you, I think you can find that it's not this, oh, I have to go work out or I have to go to the gym, but allowing that to be, oh, I get to go do something for myself, or I can put down these stressors of the day or these work projects of the day and go enjoy 40 minutes or an hour of time to myself and a good playlist and a good rewarding endorphin boost. That exercise, it's incredible. And I think it, at any stage, whether you're training for the Olympics or trying to just enjoy a sport or be good at a sport, it's just a really great thing to get to treat yourself to.
Yeah. Love that. Love that. Well, one other thing I wanted to ask you about is I've read that you do these like 2 hour sessions on the ERK. So that's the rowing machine for people who aren't familiar with it. How do you guys do such long sessions and still stay engaged? Do you have any hacks to that?
It is hard. And I would say to me, 2 hours on the erg still is not as bad as like 30 minutes on a treadmill. Because I think the treadmill is the worst. But there's a lot. I'd say one, learning to keep myself task oriented. So if the workouts kind of have some divided intervals, that really helps out. If it's 15-minute chunks with a prescribed split, I'm not thinking, oh my gosh, I have 2 hours of staring at this wall, but it's okay, just get through this piece and get through the next piece. The thing I will say, there's a lot of motivation. There's a lot of fire in the belly towards these goals. And on days where you feel a little tired and soft, and I don't want to sit on the erg, I do think about those goals. And I need this base fitness because the bigger my base endurance is, the better I can sprint when I'm fatigued. And that requires just long, long endurance hours. So I'd say that, but also having a great team. I train here at the headquarters in Princeton, New Jersey, at the US Training Center. And I've got a great group of women in different boat classes. Some are in the eight or the four or the pair. And sitting down on the erg when you've got 20 women around you and a great playlist on the aux definitely makes those sessions. They feel like fun. They don't honestly feel like work. It feels like you just wake up and this is what we do.
That's cool. In some ways, I would imagine maybe at your age and with your experience, it's kind of cool that the Olympics has already decided that your event is done after this. You don't have to make any choices about sticking in for another Olympics.
Yes, and I am grateful for that. But and I think what I will share this, I think what's also fascinating, whoever wins the Paris Olympics will forever be the reigning champion, the reigning Olympic champion of the lightweight women's double, because it will never happen again. So there are
That's a
some
good
really
way to
big
look
goals
at it.
about being able to do really well at that race and drop the mic and be done with rowing. At least as an athlete, I do have aspirations to coach down the road,
Yeah,
but
well, how great would that be? So, what are some great ways for people to keep in touch with you on your Olympic journey here in these last couple of months and certainly during Paris?
oh my gosh, I'd be thrilled if people wanted to follow along. I love my hometown of Folsom and all the supporters I have back there. So I try and post updates on my Instagram. It's just Michelle Sexer on Instagram. Women in the Boat is also a Instagram handle for the training center here in Princeton, New Jersey. So you can get a look behind the scene of different boat classes, not just my lightweight double boat class. And always feel free to reach out. I'd love to share kind of the stories or tips and tricks other young rowers might have or other athletes with Olympic aspirations might have. And it is fun to get some of those questions from high school rowers or collegiate rowers, knowing that perhaps I have some insight or words that might help them. And if young Michelle had someone she could have reached out to ask questions, that would have been really cool. So please always feel free to reach out or follow along as we train for Paris.
All right, well, best of luck. I'll see you out there.
All right. Thanks, Deirdre.
Thanks for listening. You can find our podcast, Dying to Ask, The Road to Paris, wherever podcasts are found. We're hearing from athletes and experts ahead of the games.